Welcome to Live Action Star Wars. I'm James.
I'm Ralph.
And today we are talking about Andor Episode 6, The Eye.
The Eye.
The Eye.
We have a guest today, Adam Fraser. He'll be showing up in a little bit. The Eye. We kind of knew what this episode was going to be just based on this sort of three-arc structure.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, here's Adam now.
Beak of the Devil.
Lost him in. Perfect. Just in time.
Amazing timing.
I made it.
How you doing, Adam?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, all good. We're all good over here.
Yeah.
We literally just started.
Awesome.
Yeah. So far, we have three folks in the chat. Jeremy Kelly, who can't make it out here, who is dealing with his own kidney stones. I am kidney stone free as of Sunday. Holy shit. And then Rick DeMint also can't show up, but that's okay.
I was just reading these comments. They both sound like they were expecting us to be on at our regular time and then couldn't make it. But yeah, no, not here. But Scott D is here as always. Thank you for joining us, Scott D. And of course, StreamYard. How can we forget StreamYard?
Thank you. Coming in every show. To let us know.
No matter the time, they're always here for us.
Stevie's here too.
So
guys, like, we were expecting this to be the episode where we get to see the heist. And what was kind of fun, it was all heist.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't get Mon Mothma, we didn't get Laverne.
What's his name? Shirley. I thought it was amazing that the heist went off without a hitch. It just went perfectly smooth sailing all the way to the end. And then and then we just saw everyone celebrate at the end.
18-minute episode. They just got it done. Yep.
Got in, got out.
Like the way heists go, though, in these things, and I guess it makes sense because we didn't really get a whole ton of information about what the heist was going to be. Usually you get a setup so that you know when the things go south, that things are going south.
Yeah.
But in this, like, seriously, there wasn't really a whole lot of interference. Like, they picked the right time to do it and had the right things.
Nemec had a solid plan. It sounds like it was mostly him doing, like, the admin side of the plan.
And
he had it down.
They really threw the whole, like, once you get into the vault, all that stuff was completely new. Like, I was like, oh, I thought the money's already going to be on the ship and they're just going to take the ship out of there. They had to haul it into the ship. Like, that, again, there were so many wrinkles there.
It makes sense why Gorn, like, said that there had to still be a crew working in there because they knew that they needed them, like, to actually load the ship to get as much of it as they could.
Yeah.
But it was really good. I mean, Stevie mentions that, we did get Mon Mothma at the end. We got a little bit of Mon Mothma. We got a little bit of Luthen and of what's her name. I didn't make any notes for this Deirdre. Episode. I literally just Deirdre. Finished this episode about 5 minutes ago.
Well, I took, you're still on the high.
Yeah, I'm still on the high. I'm still tense from the episode because pretty much from the moment it starts, it doesn't let up. In the same way with episode three of the show, like, we've been building for two episodes now, and so that tension is just palpable throughout. And the score just I don't know if there was lulls in it, but it didn't feel like there was 1 second of, like, downtime.
No.
Yeah, it was a
Nicholas Brittle's nailing it too.
Everyone is nailing it in this show. This might be my favorite. I mean, again, I'm only 6 minutes away from watching it, so I'm very, very close at the moment. This might be my favorite episode of Star Wars TV so far.
You know, it's up there. It's tied, I think, for me with the Marshall from The Mandalorian, because I just thought that hour of the crate dragon and the Tuskens and Cobb Vanth and everything was just so up my alley. But this episode was tremendous from, like, the dialogue to the visuals. You know, the Eye of Aldani sequence was like jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
That's the thing with Star Wars is that everybody has a blank slate to do whatever fantastical thing they want to do with Star Wars. But it seems like in the Disney era, and I'm not knocking anybody, I like all of the Disney era, But I feel like a lot of the guys, like from J.J. Abrams, even Rian Johnson and Filoni and Favreau, are trying to hold on to the nostalgia instead of like, we have this blank slate. Star Wars can be anything. Mm-hmm. And to create this whole world of this this sort of religion and this culture and it being centered around this great event, like that looked as amazing as was promised. And like Star Wars, you can do anything you want. You can do anything you want. And I want more of that. It was so great.
Like, I think so many of those guys that you listed, basically all of the other sort of people in charge that have been creating stuff in the Disney era have been, and they've all mentioned it in some varying capacity. They've all sort of tried to recapture that magic from when they were nine. Whereas this is the first show that it's like, I'm not trying to recapture anything. I'm giving you a brand new story that is fresh. And it's like, it's just, yeah, it's heads and tails above everything else so far. And that sequence, that Aldani, like the eye sequence, like the wide shot where you see the base and the lower sort of third of the screen and then all of the stuff going on above it. That's up there with like the most stunning shots in Rings of Power and House of the Dragon and all these like shows that are getting so much attention at the moment for how good they look visually. Like it is up there with all of those.
I love the beginning of the episode where like you just see one of these sort of meteorites or whatever they are flying overhead, and I'm like, oh, is that an Imperial ship? Is someone firing on them? What's going on? And then it's like, no, this event is going to kind of last all day, and it kind of sets a little bit of a ticking clock, but also it's like this reminder of this impending thing that's about to happen, and it just is like so amazingly written that they've added that in, this sort of like foreboding, this thing.
It's a drip. It's a dripping tap. It's something that is like and it ramps up, and then later on when Vel, I think it says, like, I think there's two coming, I can hear two coming, and then it's like, okay, cool, it's starting to build and build and build.
I don't this could be a controversial opinion, I'm not sure, but, and I'm not talking about story. Story's very different from script. Yeah. But I think in terms of script and structure, I think Andor has had the best scripts of maybe anything we've encountered Star Wars. From the dialogue to the way that the stories are structured and everything sort of plotted out, it's really, really impressive. I'm not saying it's nearly as emotional or what have you as like the original trilogy or whatever. But those are big sweeping arcs, whereas this, it really feels like every moment, you know, I find myself like writing down a lot of the dialogue because it's so it's powerful.
George Lucas based Star Wars off of a lot of things, but mostly Flash Gordon, Wizard of Oz, stuff like that, stuff for kids. So the dialogue's always been sort of easy to digest.
To the point.
Look at the prequels with Anakin and Padme's love scenes. Like, they're all very basic. They get the point across. Anyone can get it. He's always said they've been silent movies that you can watch them without listening to the dialogue. And this approach to Andor is more like, I feel like Tony Gilroy are like kind of leaning into the sort of the Kurosawa, like the Seven Samurai direction of things, where if you watch Seven Samurai, it's something like 3.5 hours long, and there's no real samurai action until closer towards the end. And I feel like he's leaning into that more of a Game of Thrones thing, where it's like, okay, we're going to do Star Wars, but we're going to do an adult version, but it's just, we're going to focus on story and dialogue as opposed to the serial aspect of having, you know, a fight scene or a climax or some big event every 10 minutes, like a Flash Gordon serial. But I mean, it feels adult in like the best way. Like, it still has reverence for Star Wars.
Yeah.
But
it's the
TIE fighters and Imperial Guards, it's not Star Wars.
I am terrified of TIE fighters now. Like,
right?
These last couple episodes Yeah, yeah, legit scary stuff. And just the way that that whole sequence was shot in this episode, it was just incredible looking.
When they started, when the TIE pilots started docking their ships or getting on the ships, I literally said out loud, like, oh, shit. And it's like three TIE fighters, like three TIE fighters. We've seen
Luke armies. Blew up three TIE fighters in like the Falcons.
We saw Poe Dameron take out three like it was nothing. Like it's yeah.
But it's interesting. It's all context and it's all mood.
Yeah. But then the fact that like they're driving a bus, like it's the shuttle that they are trying to escape in is, it's like trying to escape in a container that. Like doesn't even have a front cabin. It's like it's just a container that flies. It's it's such a hunk of junk that it's like, yeah, no wonder that three tires, one tire would be a threat to them in regular circumstances.
Yeah, it was kind of this fun like reverse of the opening sequence of Revenge of the Sith. Like instead of this huge unwieldy ship crashing through the atmosphere and there's all this debris, it's going up through the atmosphere and there's all this debris. It was pretty cool. But like right off the bat, that like the episode starts, you have Nimic and Cassian talking before things get started, and Cassian tells him like the Empire doesn't play by the rules, they don't care enough to learn, and they don't have to because you mean nothing to them. That was just such a strong statement right off the bat. I thought
the statement of like, because Nimic is an idealist, he's got his manifesto, he wants to improve everything and everyone like in the galaxy, which is great, but it's not realistic. And that's what Cassian is sort of trying to say to him. It's like, you can want to teach them all you want. You can want to teach them a lesson. It doesn't matter how many times you teach them a lesson. They're not going to learn. They don't need to learn. They don't care. Like it is absolutely, they'll be pissed off at you for what you did, but they're not going to learn a lesson. They're just still going to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like immediately following that, we got a scene that, back to your point, Adam, where it just feels tight. And it's the scene with them like working on the communications. And it's the sort of thing that in most other Star Wars, it'd be like, okay, cool. We killed their comms, but we can still talk to each other. And it's like, you would just sort of yada yada over it. And you wouldn't need to worry about it. It's, they've got a way around it. But the fact that they show that, and it takes them a little while to sort of tune into the right frequency, right. I think it just shows a maturity to the story. Like
we've seen so many knobs in Star Wars,
and this episode alone, like it looked like they were. I mean, I've seen videos of the Smuggler's Run ride where like people are hitting buttons and stuff. Yeah, it looked like when they're going through and like trying to shut down communications and things like that, it's just switches and buttons, and I loved it.
Well, the knobs and switches subgenre of Star Wars fandom is losing it this morning. This is a big win.
This is a big win
for them.
Pizza retailer over at Star Wars Minute.
Also, fans of people swimming in Star Wars, which it's always great to see like an underwater sequence. They had that like fan engine, and they had the breathers and stuff.
We got the scene from The Rock where like they take the little underwater scooters into the base. It's great. I loved it.
I mean, I'm gonna have to interject here. It's from Thunderball.
fair.
It was using The Rock, both the breathers and the breathers and
The Rock Jedi is a Bond too. Movie anyway. Don't worry about it.
It is. I agree. It's 100% a Bond movie.
There was also the kind of Nimic and Cassian when they're having that conversation, and Nimic's like, should we just submit and be thankful, you know, for what we have? And Cassian's like, do I look thankful to you?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Man, I just think the dialogue is so great. And then it's also very funny because you have the scene with the Commandant and he's trying to put his sash on, and the wife suggests that maybe he's expanded, you know, instead of things being compressed.
It's just like, it's the tightness of the, you expanded. It's not saying, well, you've put on weight since you've been here. It's like, it's just being a little bit like they are highfalutin.
Yeah.
That character, that whole scene and everything with the Commandant, this is a character that we've been introduced to in this episode. We've never seen him before. Mm-hmm. And we get a whole arc for that guy. Like we know who he is. We know that he has a family. We've got a backstory, and it's so fascinating that they're taking the time to expand on what should just be like throwaway. It's the general. It's the commandant. It's the boss of the base.
But he's got
a reason for why they need him.
I loved the subtle, maybe not so subtle, depending on who you are. Sort of metaphors going on there with when he's down in the vault and he's being forced to work, maybe for the first time in his career, actually work and move those, you know, the credits around.
He's sweating buckets.
He has a heart attack and dies.
Yeah. You know, he's sweating buckets, like more so than the other guys who are down there moving this stuff all the time. Like, they're not happy about it, but they look like they can do the work. Whereas this guy's sweating buckets and then, literally just has a heart attack and dies, which is, we've never seen that in Star Wars before.
Never seen a heart attack.
No.
Now, also never seen anyone take a leak, which we saw an Imperial officer take a leak while Vel and Syntha were hiding in those rocks. So
He couldn't find the refresher in time. Like, so
every day there's, you know, every episode there's
something new,
to analyze.
we don't really,
there could be a really heart attack page on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's already there. I don't know if we don't really see a lot of kids in Star Wars. And so we get to see this dude's kid.
Mm. And yeah, it's the only time that I can think of they've been slaves.
To avoid going to the Imperial, you know, event.
He doesn't want to go to the big sort of gala, essentially. Like, so he's I'm feeling but sick
seeing
today.
Seeing him dressed, like we saw that in Obi-Wan. With Princess Leia not wanting to dress up in the thing and go to the event. And it's interesting to see this side of it and see the little kid dressed as an Imperial officer, essentially, and just being like, oh man, like the grip of the Imperial Empire isn't just through adults.
It's big Hitler youth energy, kids. Isn't it? It's right there.
It's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's a sort of their take on groomers, but I definitely felt like that during the episode, like just watching it, like, holy shit, a little kid dressed as an Imperial officer is bad news.
And the fact that, really, I mean, we said it with Cyril in the first couple of episodes, but what they've done here is probably just gonna radicalize that kid and make him a hardline Imperial. You're training the next generation of assholes by robbing them, holding them at gunpoint. That kid's not going to be friendly to the rebellion.
Yeah, that was nuts.
It's true.
Right at gunpoint, they are using that kid. So even the Imperial officer that looked like Admiral Piet, when he's just like, let the boy go. He's like, okay, you've got us, but let the boy go. That was his only thing. And then, you know, he gets shot and killed.
Yeah. I thought all that was very interesting. Also, when the Commandant and his family approach the Aldani people, they actually have his son be the person that's giving that goat hide over. So they're already in kind of instructing him on how to
deal with the locals. That's it. Yeah. It's the faux diplomacy of it all. Yeah.
You had the great line from the Aldani leader as well, who was like, may the eye stay open long enough to find some good within you.
I think you said that guy was full of sass. Like, he was, and like when he was just like, you know, it would be nice. We don't forget, basically, was the sort of the message of it. It's like, we remember, we've got long memories here. Tell him that.
Yeah.
Of course, he turns around and tells him what he wants to hear. But like, those guys, they didn't give a fuck. They took that sash straight away as soon as their backs were turned and threw it on the fire.
I love, like, when he, like, walked through the little, like, barricade that they had made, and he was just holding his staff up. Like, it felt like when you go to Celebration and you have to stand outside for 3 hours and they finally let you in. It's like, everybody's like,
It was either that or a bit Monty Python. Like,
But so everything is going pretty well. Then the comms guy detects sort of an issue with, you know,
good at his job.
They shut down everything apart from the communications to the airbase, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
So that made me think, because the Commandant, as they're bringing him in, is saying, like, I don't have access. It gets relayed through the airbase sort of thing. So did they need to leave that open so that he could do that, so he could use his access to get to that? Or otherwise, why not shut down the communications to the airbase?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'd need to go back and check that out again to sort of try and figure it out.
I was wondering if it also had something to do with the fact that they were purporting themselves as soldiers from that airbase, right? Didn't they? Like, they said they were from the garrison or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that had anything to do with it or yeah. not, but possibly. The Cinta getting left behind is a little
was that part yeah. of the, yeah, I couldn't tell. Was that part of the plan? Like, or
it had to have been.
Yeah, yeah,
I guess it seemed so. Like there was no way of getting her there because she was miles away. She was like out in the valley.
I'm and I think, assuming coming back later somehow. Because if Luthen can come and go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Luthen's ship can't be tracked, right? It's like some sort
he's,
of like
he's stealth definitely modded it out
experimental yeah. thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's how he was able to land there undetected the first time around. But mm-hmm. after that attack, it's going to be very hard for anyone to just sort of land on that planet and get her out of there. So I am sort of wondering what's happening there. And I could be wrong about this because I haven't went back and rewatched, but there's shots in the trailers, right, of like a Star Destroyer very yeah. low overhead right. on Aldani.
Keep waiting for that one.
And it looks like Cinta is the one looking up at it. And she's back yeah. in her, like, you know,
in the camps, yeah.
Farmer yeah. Garb. So
it looks like she's going back in with that group that was down at the temple. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
maybe she's just hanging out with them until
she might have like a cover. Pickup spot or something that
I thought, I mean, as they were approaching the base in the first place, like I thought it was really interesting that they're essentially double disguised. They've got their Imperial yeah. garb on, and then they've got the, right. the sort of the worshippers over the top of it so that they can just shed that when they need to. It's smart. Like they know what they're doing. It was a well thought out and for the most part, a well executed plan. Like it's the things that went wrong, I think mostly were beyond their sort of comprehension before, but like it wasn't them messing up.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
It was other things, yeah. outside factors that it was went wrong for them.
It was interesting too, just in comparison to Rogue One, where you know Rogue One going into it, you know pretty much everyone's going to die here, and mm-hmm. the way that it's put together, that final act, everyone sort of gets their moment to shine. They go out like a boss, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas here, I thought it was interesting that Terramin and Gorn are just sort of very, very killed unceremoniously.
Straight away. Where
you're like, is Gorn dead? Like, yeah. You know, they just get shot and that's it. And so that's an interesting juxtaposition to think about, like moving forward and how Cassian is going to see a lot of people die probably in between here and Rogue One. And how
yeah.
also going back to Luthen's comments about like, wouldn't you like to like, do give something it big.
For,
give it all.
Give it all for yeah.
One
yeah.
thing, and that really is the Death Star.
Absolutely, that, really is, Rogue that One. Is what he was willing to give it all for. It's like up till that point, maybe not. Like that wasn't big enough. It wasn't big enough. It wasn't big enough. That's yeah. big enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. We're like, we got. I mean, yeah, we were predicting. I feel like most of these guys were going to die, if not all of them. Obviously, other than Cassian, and. A lot of them did. Yeah. Gorn went out. Nemec went out. Skeen went out. Or Skeen went Skeen, out. Like,
yeah.
Skeen, like they all went, but they all went differently. As you said, two of them yeah. went out kind of unceremoniously. But that, I think because it wasn't a big ceremonious moment, it felt mm-hmm. harder. It felt like a, oh shit, anyone can go at any point. Like they're not going to make a big yeah. thing. It's not going to be a big
Especially...
last
thing. Because we spent multiple episodes with them, you know, yeah. that yeah. slow, deliberate pacing of introducing everyone and giving them sort of a backstory as to why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really pays off when you sort of pull the rug out from under people and take them away from you.
I thought it was kind of interesting that the two that went out very quickly were the Imperial officer who was defecting and the former, like the defected,
the stormtrooper.
We found out this episode that he used to be a stormtrooper. So
yeah.
that's interesting as well, that it's the two that had betrayed the Empire or were in the midst of betraying the Empire that they took out first. Like that corporal, as he was coming down the stairs, was not happy. He was ready to take him out straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
But this also shows that they're going beyond cloning.
Yeah.
Like Empire's actually like recruiting now instead of just relying on clones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But one of the things I wanted to mention before we discuss anything else is Imperial Caterers.
Yeah.
Imperial Caterers.
Man, they had a spread.
They looked nice.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
They
did.
Looked pretty
And I
good.
Love the uniform. I love yeah. that it's the long jacket, but there was like some sort of a, like a vinyl.
Like an apron. It was like an apron over the top, wasn't it? Yeah.
Into the suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if anything hits it, it like slides down. I'm like, oh my gosh, the caterer.
Where have I seen those glasses? Someone was holding those glasses that like Solo. They have the bowl on top. Solo. Yes, that's where I thought they were. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very good. So was there a dining table in the command center, like where the two guys were on consoles? It looked like the dining table was right there. It's like, had they just set up a dining table so that like everyone could enjoy it?
It looks like when you have an all day meeting at work and they set up the like catering table, you know, that's what it looked like. Like there were pastries and all kinds of
stuff. It's once every 3 years. We can like, you still need to be on your stations, but you know, come and enjoy some food with us.
So funny.
Yeah, it's good.
And I'm assuming those guys traveled with the sort of commander guy.
With the commander. Oh, yeah. But again, like we got everyone like this week was talking about, oh, who's the Imperial Engineer going to be? Is it going to be Galen Erso? Is it going to be? It's like, no, it's no one. It's just a character that's there. Like it doesn't need to be.
I really thought it was going to be Dedra. I had the show art all set up and I'm like, I don't think I'm going to have to change it because in the picture she was looking up and I'm like, oh, she's looking at the eye. I'm like, good, I won't have to adjust the art. And then I'm like, oh, I definitely need to adjust the art.
Yeah, she's barely in it.
another major happening we have to talk about is the four-armed doctor, Dr. Quadpaw.
Is that his name?
Is that his name? Yep,
that's his name in the subtitles.
Perfect Star Wars name. Yep. Great Star Wars. He should be a pod racer.
I could picture the Ralph McQuarrie concept art of him that didn't get used. And I don't know if it doesn't already exist. He looks so 1977.
It looks like the sort of thing that Ralph McQuarrie could have had a cameo in as that guy. Like, you know, put Ralph McQuarrie in that and then just have someone stand behind him with their arms out. Like, it's such everyone's done that effect. Like, every school kid has played that and done that. Oh, wait, look, I've got four arms. But now we're getting
It looked like the front arms were coming out of the chest, though.
Yeah, they were.
Like, I'd like to see the rig because it looked really good. Like, at first, I'm like, oh, it's just someone with their arms under. But when he was standing up straight, it looked like the extra arms were coming out of his chest. It was really cool looking.
We've seen a few different doctors between, like, Babu Frick. In Mandalorian, we've got, what's his name, the DJ. And now in this, we got another doctor.
Yeah,
we got Thundercat in this. They're all slightly different, but they're all weird and quirky. I like it.
This guy looked like Malcolm McDowell mixed with like Ochi of Bestoon. Like it was a real like weird
the
situation.
The goggles were right there. They were very Ochi.
Yeah.
I loved it. I'm expecting a pop and a Black Series figure. And like, I feel like this dude, he's just so weird looking. And he really didn't say much.
I think he had like one line. He's like, oh, wait, I did everything I could.
He like made the offer to take a ship or whatever.
Yeah.
But just say, I'm sorry.
That little moon they were on or whatever was so cool. Like it had grass.
It reminded me of Luke's temple. Like,
Yeah.
Just sort of little huts built up. But the other one in the skybox like, was right there. It looked really close.
Yeah.
It's cool. What did you think of Skeen's offer? Did you see it coming? Did you think he was for the cause?
I don't know.
I binge watched The Bear in 2 days in this last week.
Yeah.
So now I see him being a dickhead and I'm like, yep, nope, that fits. That's exactly Cousin.
Totally.
Like, that is
him. The thing is, like, he was such an asshole the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the heist was going so well, it kind of went off without a hitch. That I completely forgot, oh, this guy's an asshole. Yeah. Like, I was like, all right, I was so focused on them making it through this ordeal. I forgot that, oh, this guy could be a turncoat at any moment. And the fact that he, like, they made it off.
And he seemed like he was really trying to save Nemec as well. Like to the point where he was like, hang on, we'll be there in a sec. When Cassian is urgently trying to get them away, he's trying to save Nemec.
Or I'm now wondering if he was trying to get them to go to the doctor just to use it as an opportunity
to escape,
to sort of take the ship away kind of thing.
Very possible. You know, that was his clean break.
It's tough to say because they did make you think that he was legitimately not only for the cause, but also like they show him having a friendship of sorts with Nemec where he's sort of joking around, like I barely trust you kind of thing. But yeah, they got 80 million credits. They were going to split it down the middle.
Do you know what the goal was? to get to for the heist.
I mean, it looked like they maybe got a third of what was in that vault, I'd say. Yeah. Like,
I think they were just trying to get as well, much, you know, Luthen said it was like the quarterly payroll. Yeah. So
they, like for the entire star system sort of thing. So
yeah.
You think about how many occupied planets, how many staff on each, like it's gonna be yeah.
I really liked that sequence because while I was disappointed in Skeen as being this turncoat, I thought the character itself and what it was trying to do was so much more effective than, say, like DJ from The Last Jedi, which I think is kind of trying to accomplish the same thing, which is Skeen says, I am a rebel, but it's everybody against me.
Yeah. It is a similar sort of, yeah.
He's like the opposite side of the coin of, he's like Han Solo if he didn't have a heart, you know, is sort of what it felt like.
Yeah.
And when he says luck drives the whole damn galaxy, it is that moment of Han Solo in A New Hope, you know, where he's and Obi-Wan's like, there's no such thing.
Yeah,
as luck.
I call it's it like, luck. Yeah.
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 That there was a pause on that moment where you watching it know, well, it's not just luck, you know, it's the will of the Force, and that's what's really propelling what's happening here. But to see a character like that who is turning, and he's not defecting for, he doesn't love the Empire.
Nope.
He's just looking out for himself.
He's trying to get himself away. Like the Han comparison there is really apt because of course when Cassian takes him out, it's very reminiscent of Han taking out
totally.
Like, what's
kind of waiting for it to happen too?
Exactly. Like, I feel like we knew it was going to happen, that he was going to shoot him, but it was the quick draw, bang, done. Like, we're not going to have a standoff. We're not going to draw on each other. We're not going to fight. You're betraying me and these guys. Yeah. And while I've
got
no,
the camera doesn't even stay on Andor.
No,
to show any sort of like emotion. It's just like it's a necessary thing you had to do. Cut to the next shot inside the hospital area, and then that's it. Like, yeah.
But then
we get
Vel as well, and she doesn't believe Cassian. She's never trusted Cassian. Really, she thinks that Skeen was like down for the cause, that he was right there. So when she's calling for him, she's like, nope, you're wrong. You're lying. Like, I don't trust you. Where is he? You killed him.
Yeah.
And it's like, Cassian doesn't have any love for the cause at this point. But he's loyal to his word. He's true to himself. And I think
but he
that's
has something
difference.
In his possession now that will make him care about the cause.
Exactly. The manifesto. That manifesto is key. Like when that was introduced last week, I thought it was okay, cool. It was a character moment for Nemec, but no, that's going to be important.
Yeah. You kind of, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, well, this guy's going to die because just like any mousy guy, you know, like
the mouse guy is
in
the perfect.
Yeah. It's like that guy always dies. And so I knew Nemec was going to die probably terribly and painfully. And
by accident,
that on.
Yeah.
Who knows? It'll just be by accident.
And it's
that's the thing. It's not Star Wars is always about like the great sacrifice. And, and you normally under anybody else's, anybody who's ever directed a Star Wars, I feel under their sort of direction would have him sacrifice himself for the greater good. That's not the case. He was standing in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
No one died hitting a button to, you know, it wasn't like Rogue One where the guy like,
in a blaze of glory, taking out, like, holding the door, essentially. Like, there was no moment of that. It was during a frantic escape. Like, that launch tube was amazing. I love that launch tube. Where it's on rails because it's got to make a couple of turns and things. I thought that was very, very cool. But because they're trying to do it and they didn't have time to sort of strap in or anything like that, they all go flying. Like, Cassian's in a chair, which is okay. But, like, everyone else goes flying. And, yeah, that just... As you said, Ralph, it's just the wrong place at the wrong time. Like it's crushed.
It felt a lot like something, you know, like Saving Private Ryan, where you have all of these sacrifices happening and they all carry the same weight, even if some were accidents or some were, you know, these unfortunate tragedies. Not everyone dies a war hero, but they did die in service of something.
And then brilliantly performed as well afterwards, where he's like, I can't feel my legs. but still needs to, he knows that he's still like a linchpin in this. He's still key. And he's,
yeah, when they're, when he's trying to give the directions, give the coordinates and stuff, it's like,
and he's not, not like giving, he's just shouting like immediate, like, do this right now. I can't explain to you why or what we've got to do or where we're going. It's just like up, down.
And
like,
it's Cassian having to trust this kid.
Exactly. But that kid who's already saved Cassian's life earlier on, like by waiting, taking that shot when he did, when the other guy was choking him out.
It's also interesting to think about scenes in Rogue One in contrast to that, like when they're escaping Jedha and they're trying to climb.
Yeah.
I'll make the calculations for you kind of thing. It's we're just seeing sort of the birth of Cassian as this legitimate hero, because he will have experienced all of these different elements of being a rebel that will make him the ultimate person to lead the mission on Rogue One.
Also, K2's last words to Cassian were climb.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like literally, like his last thing that he said to him is climb. Like it's wow. That's a weird comparison. I don't know if that was intentional by the Gilroy brothers, but either way, like it's there. It works.
And then also it works with his relationship with Jyn Erso and him being able to trust her because he doesn't know who she is.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of trust issues, and rightfully so. And it'll be interesting to see him actually, like,
develop.
Seeing this Cassian where he is now, holding up a doctor, a kid that just died, and Vel. And it's like, that guy being in the same room and having conversations with Mon Mothma, like, seem like completely different people. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that comes about. I can't wait to see these stories come together with Luthen and Mon Mothma and Andor. And
before the season started, like, there was all the press and everything. And I think Diego Luna at one point said, like, the Cassian that you see in Rogue One and the Cassian that we see at the beginning of this show are going to be like unrecognizable. And I thought, okay, that's press talk. That's them just saying, like, look, it's going to be a couple of seasons. We're going to get some development. It's the same spiel that everyone gives for everything. Fine. It's cool. But it really is like they are. He is in a very, very different place. Even now, six episodes in, halfway through this series, he is still in a very different place. Like, I believe that he is going to take his cut and get the fuck off of this. Like, I think he's leaving. He's gone. He's not going to be with Vel next episode. I think it wouldn't surprise me if he goes back home and then we get some more stuff back there. He's in hiding somewhere. Like, I don't know where he's going, what he's doing exactly, but I feel like Vel will be connecting back up with Luthen, and Cassian will be going back, and then it'll be Luthen basically going, so he worked out. He was good. You believe me now? Like, this guy is someone that we need because, you know, and I don't know how they reconnect again, but.
Yeah, because we know from the trailers that there's like a sequence that looks like it's on Ferrix with like clone troopers, and it looks like he's there. So maybe he goes back and finds that, you know, Bix has been arrested or something. I don't know. He has to get into prison somehow also.
That shot that we got of Ferrix where, like, all of the people that we'd met in those first three episodes were hardening because based on everything that had just happened, like, it's seeds of rebellion. It's that form, that forming around it. It's like, I could see him going back and them being, like, the ones who want to fight. He doesn't want to at first. He starts reading the manifesto and then he's like, holy shit. Like, these guys are like, it is a powder keg. It's ready to burst sort of thing here. And he can be the one to ignite it there and, or unite them all under a cause. That clone trooper sequence, I saw someone on Twitter. I blanking on who it was, but someone, I think they pointed out that Cassian's dad or the adopted dad was in one of those scenes. That could be a continuation of flashback. Yeah. Okay, we haven't had any flashbacks these three episodes.
And we also haven't had stormtroopers, so
we don't know. We've seen some on Coruscant, that's it, but
Yeah, but I'm assuming they will be like stormtroopers, but the fact that it's clone troopers would be
and
flashback.
Deidre is going to show up with some death troopers at some point as well.
So it could be a paralleling story where we get like the all on Ferrix, but we get the flashback of when stormtrooper or clone troopers were there and they killed his dad. they hung him up in the streets. And then we get the current where Deidre's going in, maybe based on the things that Cyril has told her or something, whatever happens there, however those stories come together.
Right.
And then Cassian and everyone else there kicking off. So it wouldn't surprise me if we get at least one of these next two arcs, if it is going to be two more arcs.
I'm extremely happy it didn't go this way in hindsight, but going into this episode, I was for sure classic Star Wars intercutting between different sequences, that we were going to see the heist intercut with the dinner party to some extent.
Mm.
And I'm glad
tension on different levels, sort of thing.
Right, yeah. And I'm glad we didn't get that, because now we get presumably an episode that's mostly dinner party and Sly Moore making conversation with people.
I can't wait to see it. Like, I'm fascinated what they're going to do with Sly Moore.
But I thought the scenes at the end were so cool, with seeing the Senate again, hearing Mon Mothma continuing to talk about the Gormans.
Yeah, it's building to the Gorman massacre. Like,
they're really hammering that home, that's where her arc is headed, you know? Mm-hmm. And also the great scene of Luthen sort of hearing the news and going back behind in the back room and sort of celebrating to himself, I thought was fantastic.
I think laying the groundwork for the Gorman stuff here, as they're doing with Mon Mothma, is really interesting. A lot of people are like, oh, I hope we see the Rebel crew, or we see her escaping. It's like, no, we've already seen that. We don't need to see it again. I'm cool with them saying, like, they're laying the groundwork for it here. Then we get the scenes over in Rebels, and then come back season two, and she's at base one. She's escaped, like, because of those scenes in Rebels.
It's tough to say, you know, because of the timeline, things are really going to start overlapping. And so we could have a situation where, because I believe in Rebels, right, we see she gives the speech, right, and basically points the finger at Palpatine. Like, I think we could see that scene.
I think we could see the speech, but
if you remember maybe the first episode of Bad Batch, the way we saw Palpatine's sort of Senate address as the Emperor, we saw that through a different lens of all the stormtroopers watching it. I feel like we could see Mon Mothma giving that speech on the HoloNet or in a hologram or something like that.
Am I wrong? She's on the Ghost when she's giving that speech, I think, isn't she?
I think so. I think so.
If I remember rightly, So we don't need to see it from her perspective, but we could see, and the same thing, I think, with Saw Gerrera's speech that he gives in Rebels, like, on, they see it on the Hollow when they're on Yavin. We could see that from Saw's perspective.
True.
Potentially, like, we could see these things that we've seen, but from a different angle, which would be,
what's good about Disney Plus is at the end of whatever episode this is, it can go into the bottom corner. The credits can go into the bottom corner. You have a big fat picture of Mon Mothma in that episode of Rebels, so you can watch it.
Delivering that speech. Yeah, exactly. It's right there. It's the related content stuff. It's what they all should be doing.
I mean, this is the midway point, which is great to say, because we still have six episodes of this and it's fantastic. But, you know, the slow build to this sort of mid-season break, you know, if it was on TV, delivered, like, all the action, all the suspense, all the excitement that you would want from, like, a Star Wars movie, you got in this episode. And so it will be cool to see it. Maybe it starts to go back down and we get yet another, crescendo.
It's weird where this was the longest episode, I think, so far of the season as well. Like, it felt like a sweep episode. We're just going to go a little bit longer. We're going to give you something special, you know.
Yeah.
One of these characters won't survive. Like, you could sort of see if it was network TV, like,
And so
we were waiting for it. We knew it was coming.
Yeah, we knew that, like, it was like, who, yeah.
It's so added to the suspense. We've had all week to worry about how this was going to go down, if it was going to happen without a hitch, how it's going to go. And so the whole time I'm just like sitting there like, holy shit, like, this is really, really not tense, but I just had no idea where it was going. I was
on in for the ride.
It was exciting without having like any sort of flash and bang and like anything like that. It was just, I'm in it for the characters, and this is very exciting for the characters, and I'm along for the ride. I don't need to see a billion. I mean, there are laser battles, but you know, I don't need to see that.
They've developed every character as well. Like, I think that's the key, is that they aren't just archetypes. They are fully fleshed out characters. What's her name, who they left behind, I think is probably the least developed of the crew so far. Cinta, yeah. Mm-hmm. But we know that her family was slaughtered by stormtroopers. We know, it sounds like maybe she was a local. So we don't know much about her, but the fact that she's left behind, the fact that in that trailer shot, it looks like that we are going to see more of her. The fact that she's got this relationship with Vel as well. Like, I feel like, I don't feel like we're missing much with her. I still feel the weight of her being left behind because we know that there's more coming and they've done enough to sort of lay the groundwork for it. So, but everyone else, like, you get it. You know why they're there, what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's great.
I
don't know what else to say. It's
before. And I mentioned it before, but it is, I think, my favorite episode of Star Wars television.
Yeah.
Listen, as much as I loved the finale of season two of Mandalorian, and it was super emotional, it just hinged on the fact that I got to see Luke Skywalker.
It's based on a moment more than everything else.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to need for Andor to eclipse the other series for me, because I love them all sort of equally. And while I will acknowledge that I think, like I said earlier, this one is probably written better than most.
But, well, I mean, for me, The Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie ever, but my favorite is 1977 Star Wars.
There's always a difference between best and favorite.
And for me, I'm going to need more weird aliens, I'm going to need more droids, and I'm going to need them to be more important to the overall story, because here I understood that, okay, maybe you wouldn't have a lot of aliens in this group of rebels because they're trying to infiltrate the Empire and they're, you know, xenophobic, what have you. But I think you're doing a disservice to Star Wars by only showing human characters in this struggle. When we talk about diversity in Star Wars and people like connecting to characters or seeing themselves on screen, I mean, I'm not a giant ape or an alien from outer space, but King Kong and E.T. remain extremely powerful to me in that regard of like connecting with a character. Mm-hmm. And I really need to see some more aliens stepping up and being part of the rebellion and more droids and things like that. So,
and we know that by the time Rogue One comes around, there are like aliens in the rebellion and like basically working with alongside Cassian and stuff.
Are we going to get Raddus? I'm not into the character cameos of the week, but I just realized Raddus is huge and I love Raddus.
Oh yeah. God, I didn't even think about Raddus.
I don't think this season, but season maybe two. Next, maybe season next two year. Yeah. I was going to say about your point. Oh, like Raddus, I think so even if we don't this season, as we get closer and closer to Rogue One, and those sort of each three episodes is a year jump. We should get lots then, I think. I hope.
I'm just getting a little like I'm getting crumbs right now, and I know when Saw shows up, he'll have his boys with him and
two tubes
again. I'm gonna need some more. You know, like even
we are only six episodes in, and we visited two planets. So it's been over a month, but at the same or a little. You know, but we've got time. I think we'll be happy.
Ralph, if we go back to Ferrix, we could see Creepy Kid again.
Ooh, Creepy Kid.
I'm so excited to see Creepy Kid.
Yeah.
The Danhausen, like Space Danhausen.
I hope he hasn't been hanged.
Don't do it. Don't give us.
Yeah, he'll be hung like this permanently.
Oh, no. But he'll hop off of his little platform, off his bucket. He'll just do a little hop.
One defiant hop.
That's right. I forgot.
I hope we see. Yeah.
We only have the two.
But yeah, that's why, you know, like stuff like Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian is going to be like forever so dear to me, because it is fully embracing that wacky, wild world of Star Wars where a character that looks like a blue elephant can hold the same narrative, like, you know, importance as the, you know, a rebellion hero. And that's sort of even something like Battlefront 2, where you have the character like Shriv. I'd love to see someone like that show up, like a legit alien co-star. Yeah.
Yeah. Shriv is someone that is like, you don't need to know anything about him. You don't need, he doesn't need to be a big name. It doesn't need to be anything. Like, he's a grumpy Duros. Like, that is his entire thing. Like, so you can do whatever you want with him. In the same way that we've said it a few times, when they plugged in Saw into Rogue One, you can plug in Shriv as just a grumpy alien working for the rebellion. And
yeah,
he's great. And that would be perfect. And also more Duros in my Star Wars. I love Duros.
It's true.
I met the actor who played Black Chrysanthemum.
Oh, wow.
On Friday. And I didn't realize it until after I was long gone. I'm like, I think that guy might be Black Chrysanthemum. And
was he also Swamp Thing then?
He was Man.
No, he was Man Thing.
Oh, Man Thing. Sorry, my bad.
How dare you?
It's been a long day. Characters. Very, very different. Totally different. But yeah, one of them is definitely better than the other, and it's Man.
Yeah.
I was like, I think it's him, but I should have looked it up before I actually talked to him. But
oh, anyway. That's very cool.
It was fun. But yeah, I mean, I can always use more aliens and droids. Mm-hmm. That's my main issue with Galaxy's Edge. It needs more aliens and droids walking around. Cause that feels more Star Wars. But at the same time, this is probably the only show where I'm not like staring in the background looking for Easter eggs. Like, I'm so caught up in the story and, that people kept talking about all the things that they found in Luthen's shop. Mm. And I'm like,
it doesn't matter.
I saw the sort of Vader style samurai suit, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
I didn't care.
To me, that's sort of the best kind of Easter egg, is that it's there if you want to see it and it doesn't interfere otherwise.
It's not plot. Like, you don't need to know it. You don't need to worry about it. It's the same with the ship in Solo, like all of that stuff in like his gallery.
And I saw that big crystal skull from the cover of those old like Han Solo books. I was like, that's it. I'm good.
It's cool. It's great. We love to see it, but you don't need to focus on it. Don't give me a close up zoom. Like as the camera's leaving, you linger on it or anything. Don't need any of that. Like, just, it can be there. It's set dressing. That's great. That's what an Easter egg should be.
You're supposed to find it. It's not supposed to be
exactly like
face.
Yeah. Like, if you're watching Man Thing and someone that you know happens to be dead in the background, Werewolf by Night. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Oh, yes, name, I saw your name there.
My name's yeah.
That was awesome.
The
Ralph is dead in the MCU, people.
Yeah, I am, and it's the most random Easter egg is on every Sunday on Zoom, me and Michael and a group of friends play Fireball Island, the 1986 board game, and we do it every Sunday. And if you look at the tombs with my name on it and their names on it, there's two tombs. He mashed our names into two different people. Mm-hmm. We all die on the same day, February 28th. And I went and looked at our spreadsheet to see who won on what day, and Michael won that day.
Wow. That's so amazing. It's even cooler.
I assumed it was an accident, but it was 100% intentional. He went through our thing, found a day he won that game, and then made that our death day and knocked us out.
That is a scoop. You're not gonna find that.
That's right.
You're not gonna find
you're never gonna see that Easter egg reference on any list ever anywhere else.
Who's the dude that does the breakdown? This guy, I don't remember who he is. I don't know if he's from Collider. I don't remember. But everybody's watching this breakdown, and he's breaking down every single person.
Oh, is it Christian Harloff?
He's breaking out every single name in the crypt and saying who they are, and then he mentions my name and he's like, I don't know. Just keeps on going.
Clearly, that's not great. A fan of live action Star Wars or cue the music.
Well, it's tough because it's Jorge, Andy, and my name mixed into one. He got Brandon and mixed name, but that's the group. And we've known about it for a while, and I saw a rough cut, and I was like, I kind of saw my name. It's not really in there. So by the time it came out, I was like, I wonder if I'm completely cut out, but I'm in there just enough. Jorge got a little bit of cut, but it's there. And I thank Michael for that. And for those of you who are fans of Michael Giacchino, he did great work on Rogue One. He's agreed to be on my show, Cue the Music, next week. I'm going to go do a deep dive on Werewolf by Night with him, and it's not going to be the typical questions. I have very I've been writing down very specific questions for this, so it's not going to be the same. And I'm not once going to ask him about the pun titles that he does for this.
And just to sort of bring this back around, like, I was so impressed with Werewolf by Night. I mean, honestly, it was right up my alley anyway, embracing the sort of Universal Monsters kind of vibe of it. But how do you guys feel about that sort of format, the 1 hour special being applied to Star Wars?
I've
been wanting an anthology show.
Why not?
I guess akin to Visions, but live action.
Yeah.
Like let's get young directors in who have clear visions and unique styles. And just like I said, the eye display in this episode is so nothing we haven't seen. Let creators create their own Star Wars.
I think the closest thing that we get to it at the moment is the Lego sort of specials that occasionally drop on like holidays and stuff. But give us the equivalent of that, like give us the same sort of runtime, but for different stories. It doesn't need to be a series. We've seen with a bunch of these stories now that, you know, you don't need to flesh out an entire series, but give us the Marshal as a 1 hour special sort of thing. Give us more Cobb Vanth, like just a 1 hour special just of Cobb Vanth. But
let's do caterers.
Caterers. But like it could be caterers doing like some imperial dinner. Like it could be just from their perspective. Give us the
Dr. Quadpaw doing a
medical
surgery.
Medical procedural, like one episode sort of thing. Yeah.
What if a caterer is a rebel and he's trying to slip poison into like a major imperial dignity's food, like dignitary's
or he
food.
Like hides in a giant cake and tries to infiltrate a party.
We've talked about how much this series like feels like old EU, like that. What you're talking about is it's Tales from Jabba's Palace, it's Tales from the New Republic, it's that Tales of, and we're getting that again. We're getting Tales of the Jedi animated, so give us that. But in
we're
live there, action,
we're that close. I'm hoping so Werewolf by Night opens up the floodgates, because the whole idea of this was like, well, I don't know if it's enough for a series. And I don't know if it's enough for a movie or we don't, it's not a character that really anybody knows, but it's a testing ground. You have Disney Plus. Disney Plus doesn't have to conform to the rules of network TV or commercial television or anything like that. It doesn't have to be in the theater, but it's like, hey, listen, we have characters, we have ideas, and we have a place to just like put this stuff.
Letting them change it up stylistically. It didn't look like regular Marvel stuff. It was the first time that there was like a genuine different look to it. And I thought that was so good of them to let Michael do what he wanted to do with it all. So do that. Let creators go different. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You've done it one off. It doesn't matter. You've still got your subscribers. People are talking about it for a week. But
hey, every May the 4th, drop a 1 hour special.
Yeah,
on some random character. Just do it. Why not? Like,
I like the idea. Let me tweak it. Make it
May 25th. Whatever you want to do there.
Because people, listen, the masses know Star Wars Day is May the 4th. Let's get more people coming in. So May the 4th is perfect. Do it then.
Yeah.
All the normies could come and watch it on May the 4th. We'll cover it on May the 25th.
We'll watch it. We'll give a couple of weeks and then we'll cover it on May 25th.
But also because they have sort of trained people now that May the 4th is this thing, but usually we don't really get a whole lot for May 4th.
It's that expectations lead to toxicity, but people do. They start going, oh, why was there all the announcements? Why is there not a new thing on May the 4th? It's like, they don't owe us anything.
Yeah.
It would be nice. Right. It would be cool if we get something, but they don't owe us anything.
Toxic stuff. You know what I like about this show? I don't see a lot of toxic stuff, and I think it's because of the lack of cameos. I feel like once you start putting cameos in, people are going to be like, well, that's not how this
character is supposed to be.
Well, so because it's all new characters, I'm sure there's stuff out there.
And even the characters that we have seen, like Cassian, obviously, he's a Disney era character. Like, he doesn't have that history. He doesn't have books and comics written about him. Like, we don't know.
Is really the only one so far.
That's it. Mon Mothma is the oldest character.
And she was in Return of the Jedi for like 3 minutes.
Exactly.
Maybe,
we got barely
any marquee name.
And what they have done with her daughter, like, that goes back to old EU stuff. So,
I had seen someone, I don't remember who said it, but they had sort of maybe coined the phrase that Andor was like YouTube proof, which I thought was funny because very different from what we're doing on YouTube right now. But like, but exactly what you were talking about, Ralph, where people latch on to something and they make a cute little graphic where Kathleen Kennedy has like demon eyes and they talk for 15 minutes about why this is the worst thing that ever happened.
And how she's getting fired next week and they know it. They've got their sources.
And this show doesn't have that, you know, like not to say that there isn't stuff worth talking about with it, but I think you can watch Andor and sort of completely separate from the discourse of it for a week and then just keep watching it. You know what I mean?
You can watch Andor and completely forget that it's Star Wars. Like,
whereas, you know, Boba Fett, it was very hard to do that because A, everyone had an opinion about that character to begin with. They either wanted him to be this super badass character. They hated what George did with them in the prequels or whatever, you know, however they were coming into the story. Mm. And so, you know, like a whole episode without Boba Fett. Why is the show called Book of Boba Fett? Oh, God, I can't believe it. The show's got androids in it, you know. Why is it called the Book of Luke Skywalker? You know, like stuff like that. That just doesn't work with Andor because it's like telling a more mature, deliberate story. Well, and it's hard to shoehorn that stuff into it.
Because it's Kathleen Kennedy said it's made for adults. And so the grownups are watching and it feels like the grownups are enjoying the show.
Yeah.
And unfortunately the kids who aren't acting like grownups have nothing bad to say. I mean, it's so great. I'm sure there's someone out there complaining. There's no Darth Vader. There's no lightsabers or no K2SO.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
While we're talking about that, though, it is cool that they take things from more kid-friendly shows like this whole idea of the Gorman Massacre, which is just like a footnote in one episode of Rebels. Mm-hmm. But they're giving it this weight. I mean, she's already mentioned it twice. It's going to be a major thing that they're going to play up to be a serious, dramatic.
It's definitely her political sort of like through line through the season.
So they at least are like paying attention to kids' stuff.
Yeah.
But the way that they're framing it for adults, like, I mean, it's a win-win. It's going to make people who maybe thought, oh, well, I thought Rebels was for kids or my kids really like that. It might not be for me. They might give it a shot and end up finding that
Rebels
rules got more to it.
Rebels. I love Rebels.
Yeah.
I love Rebels.
So we've talked about a lot of things. So this episode that ends, this arc ends with the quick sort of snapshot of each of the characters and where they're at. So we've got Cassian going off to go wherever he's going. We've sort of talked about that. Vel probably going to go back to Luthen. But then we got the three shots on Coruscant, essentially. What I want to talk about now just quickly is what do we think is going on with the ISB? Obviously, they are pissed.
Damage control.
It is big time damage control. Like
he's essentially like, if anybody has any ideas, I want to hear him now.
Yeah, close the doors. Tell your families you're not coming home because
don't sit down. This isn't a formal meeting.
Yeah,
just let me know what you got. It was awesome seeing them panic. A room full of Imperial officers, Imperial like strategists.
Yeah,
going crazy over what seven people did, or however many people there are.
They got
amazing,
it's exactly what he said. We're healthcare. We are here following leads. We don't act on instincts and things like that. And I think that's going to lead to Deidre going, "Well, shit! I saw this coming. Not this exact thing, but I saw these seeds being planted around the galaxy. So I need to follow on my leads, which are her instincts, which are good." So I think that's what's going to propel that forward. But see them panicking.
Yeah, because we never really, outside of like in Rogue One, where they're like deploy the garrison kind of thing, we haven't really got to see that because obviously when you blow up two Death Stars, there's not a lot of time.
Everybody's left gone. To panic. Yeah, right.
And we've always cut to celebration, you know, fireworks and everybody dancing and singing in the streets. And so it's cool to see this big thing happen and then get the Empire's perspective on it.
I love the three different reactions to the same news, though. Like the news is spreading and we got the panic. Holy shit, we need to lock this down. Then we got Mon Mothma in the Senate where... like, it seems like half the pods are empty anyway. There's no one on the main dais.
Yeah.
Like, she's delivering this thing, which is of massive amounts of importance, but no one is giving a shit. And she's looking around, and no one is paying attention.
So people are leaving.
It's interfering with diplomacy, which is how she's trying to win.
At this point, she's trying to, win in the Senate, in, like, doing it by the book.
Yeah.
She supports what's going on, but she's trying to do it her way as well. It's different sects of rebellion.
Yeah.
And seeing that and seeing basically where she's like, well, shit. I mean, I'm kind of happy, but also for fuck's sake, I'm trying to get my point across here.
Yeah.
Seeing that was interesting. And then we saw Luthen legit just celebrate. He just is laughing. He's joyous.
First
hearing the news.
Yeah.
The benefit of not intercutting the party and the heist is now we're going to go to this dinner party and that's all anybody's going to be talking about.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get a lot of different opinions and, also the fact that, we also see why she was really pissed at her crappy husband about this dinner party thing, because she's in the Senate delivering this speech about, like, we're going to do this fact finding mission. And this is, whatever exactly, I guess the trade blockade is like a boot to the throat of all Gormans. Like, she is saying all this stuff in the Senate, and then she's about to go to this party where
they're going to be talking about how evil this rebellion is and how they're destroying, like, the security of the galaxy, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. So it's going to be a very interesting situation.
I went back and I saw a couple of shots from the trailer. So we are going to get this dinner party, and she's talking to someone in the foreground. That looks a lot like Valorum to me.
Yeah, he looks like he's like could be Valorum's like uncle or something.
Yeah, it's like I wonder if they've recast a less creepy Valorum. And
I sort of think that guy is who she was talking about when she was talking to Luthen about bringing someone into the circle, because it does seem that she's having this conversation with him at the party where she's like, he's like, what do you intend to do? It's like she is sort of letting him in on something.
And if it is, Finis Valorum, it could be a case of like, look, you were the last chancellor before Palpatine. Like, what if we reinstalled you, sort of thing? It could be something along those lines. And he might turn around and be like, absolutely not. But how about my mate Bail over here? Like,
yeah, that's true.
And then we get the grand entrance of Bail Organa into the dinner party, saving the day, basically rescuing Mon Mothma from the rest of those creeps.
Yeah, that's hot. That's good stuff.
That would be very cool. This is the sort of speculation that I like, because it won't play out like that. But and I'm so excited for it to not play out like that, because speculation can lead to expectations, which can lead to toxicity, which can lead to suffering. But yes. I don't want it to play out the way that I can see it in my head. But I think that's one road that could go down that would be very cool. But then we got Luthen with full like act on talking about this medallion with a dead language and how it's like, it's beautiful because it's not sad. It's beautiful because now it can mean whatever you want. Which I thought was really interesting.
That is so interesting. And it is sort of, you could really dig deep into that if you really wanted to. I don't know the intent of that line in terms of how much weight they wanted to put into it, but man, you could really start thinking about that line a lot in that the Empire goes out of their way to like sort of erase the existence of people out of the history books. They want to wipe Jedha and the Jedi out altogether. Yeah. And so you have this thing that has this inscription that obviously meant something to someone at some point. And now some extremely rich, probably Imperial supporter is buying it. And they're
someone that looks like they're looking for their NFTs in this place. Like the guy sat on the sofa looks like he's probably browsing NFTs on his tablet. And he's like, you got anything from Aldani? Like this place is like hot at the moment. I could probably flip this.
Right.
Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's exactly the sort of vibe that I got from that guy. And the fact that that is how Luthen got the news is fascinating. He obviously doesn't know the ins and outs of it, but he knows that the basics of the plan went off. So
Yeah,
I'm interested.
I'm super excited to see what's coming with these next two sort of blocks of episodes. And, Yeah. It's going to be a long wait for season two, right? I don't think that's coming
until I don't even know if they've started.
They haven't.
I think they've. Oh, no. I think
they just started.
I think they start like November, December.
Okay. Yeah.
Something like that. But I think they said that they didn't think it was coming out until 2024. So
that makes sense if they're going sort of full Mando next year, series wise.
They've got a ton of stuff. They'll have Acolyte and Ahsoka. So,
yeah, exactly. Acolyte, Ahsoka. I think it's going to be Ahsoka, then
Skeleton
Mando.
Crew.
Yeah, there's loads. It's one of those things. I'm going to be so excited. I'm going to be so excited for when season two of Andor comes out. But
yeah,
there's plenty in between to keep us busy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting too to track sort of the overall, I guess, popularity of Andor, because I think a lot of people going into season one were sort of like, well, you know, this is sort of the first Star Wars series that is based on kind of a newer
Disney
character.
Property, essentially. Like a
it doesn't have the connection to the past like Boba Fett or Obi-Wan does. And even with Mandalorian, there was like a lot of familiarity. Like, you know the Mandalorian armor, you know an IG droid, you know maybe Grogu's.
Figures. Yeah.
Yeah, so this was the first one that really felt like not a risk, but maybe more of like an experiment. So it will be interesting to see how with season two reception and also how it affects how these shows are made.
Yeah.
You know, like if everyone not is using clamoring the about these 12 episode seasons and using real, you know, real locations and things like that, you know,
you
me
could
personally, I'd love to see a 12 one-hour episode season of Mandalorian that wasn't 100% reliant on the volume. That would be incredible. But
it just means that I feel like you can have a couple of shows in production at the same time. If you've got one shooting practically like out in locations all around the world or whatever.
Yeah.
And then one that can be like more focused and in smaller locations, the things that the volume can do really well, if they have those going all the time sort of thing, and then you've got
There's just the news that ILM, I think, was expanding to Mumbai or something like that.
Yeah,
so they're like
that.
Continuing to build like facilities and stuff. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Let's get some movie news. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Susanna White, her name should be at the top of that list. I don't want to hear anything about a new Star Wars movie unless it's Deborah Chow or Bryce Dallas Howard or Susanna White. You've got all these incredible directors from these shows that – you know, they love to chase an auteur. They love to chase a name when it comes to these movies.
But then they lose them because those guys are being chased by everyone.
Yeah, they lose them.
Given those guys who are working already, definitely.
That should be the farm system, you know? Just the way Filoni has moved from animated to live action, and he's learning every day. He's learning more of how to do live action stuff. All of these people are learning how to make Star Wars. And some
Bryce feels like the one who is primed for it, because like she's in the family, she's in the Lucasfilm family, like the Howards and the Lucases go way back, sort of thing. Like it's all right there. Like
that's part of why I brought up the 1 hour special and that idea of could we eventually get to a point where we have these Disney original movies.
Mm.
You know, like The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, all this stuff is building up to this big crossover event. Mm-hmm. Can that be a movie that comes out on Disney Plus? And you can see it in the theaters if you want. And it's
they'll do a limited release, a small release. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, something like that would be awesome.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
All right. Well, we solved everything with Star Wars. So
we fixed it. That's it, everybody.
It's done.
There's the thumbnail.
Complaints.
Kathleen Kennedy's out. Live action Star Wars in as new. Yeah.
I was just grabbing this because I forgot to grab it before the show, but Adams. Follow Adam.
That's my newsletter. I write there occasionally. I'll be writing there soon about Halloween Ends. I think that's the next movie I'll be covering. So, yep.
Have you had a chance to check it out yet?
I haven't yet. There's actually a screening tonight, but I'm not going to go. It comes out in 2 days on Peacock, so I'm just going to watch it there. So we'll see.
And then at Adam Fraser on Twitter. And
On Twitter. Yep.
Poppin' Pizza at Instagram. Mm-hmm. Man, we love having you on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Such a wealth of
most recurring
info.
Guest at this point, I think. I think so.
Your knowledge is like vast, and I don't. You two guys read, so you guys know way more. This Gorman Massacre thing. I'm like, I watched Rebels. I don't remember it.
Well, that's it was one line. Classic Star Wars. Was,
and even like that was Clone Wars being mentioned. I think the Gorman Massacre was pulled from an old RPG supplement from the 80s, I think, if I remember rightly. But it's how it should be. It's like you can take a name of something. It doesn't matter what it comes from.
Clone Wars.
Exactly.
You knew the Clone Wars. You fought with my father in Clone Wars? Yeah. I love it. That's what I love about Star Wars. Just mention stuff. Don't explain it. The audience will get it from context, but future people can go out and roll with it and do something with it. Mm-hmm. Man, I was really, really like chomping at the bit to get to this week's episode because I wanted to see this heist go down, and it was worth the wait. And I think that's what's great, even though, there's advantages to binge watching, is that you get to see it all at once, but then also you don't have time to savor it. Yeah. And I'm glad with Andor, feels like a show I'm definitely wanting to savor as opposed to just like, to binge.
We've talked about of these two arcs, the first two are building and building and building, and it makes you go, fuck, I really want the next one. I really want, and it makes you go, that 3-episode drop is really cool. It's really nice because you get a full arc of it. But having them spaced out, giving them time to breathe, just elevates it. It's the same with everything. I enjoy watching TV on a week-to-week basis so much more because you can have conversations, and it just sort of feels like it sits better.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's it.
And I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen next week. And it's kind of nice that this arc is done with, and I can just kind of relax and not just be like waiting on pins and needles for the next one to drop. So this show's terrific. It's my favorite Star Wars show. And Solo might have a contender as my favorite Disney era.
I find myself thinking so much of Solo and Rogue One while I watch this. It is sort of feels, in a lot of ways, it feels like kind of the perfect marriage of those two.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
But, yeah.
And like we were talking about the eye visually, Jedha being destroyed by the Death Star and the whole like Kessel escape, those really stick out to me as these big like visual sequences in recent Star Wars, and the Eye of Aldhani fit right in there.
I feel like Cassian and Cyril are two sides of the same coin, then Han and Cassian are like two coins that are on the same side. They're both heads up, but they're two slightly different coins.
I don't want Alden Ehrenreich.
Nope.
Because I keep thinking before the show started, I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to see Han Solo. It'd be cool. I don't want to see anybody.
Nope.
No, I don't think.
But now, I don't even need Empress Nest. I don't want anybody.
If we're gonna get
1 hour Empress Nest special. Yes, that's what I want.
That's great.
That's the thing.
If we're gonna get anyone cameoing, I want it in the Senate. I want it on Coruscant only. Like that's the only area. I mean, we're gonna get Saw, but that doesn't feel like a cameo.
I don't even care about Saw. No. I don't care about Bail Organa. Now, as of today, I just want to see Raddus. Just Raddus. Just Raddus.
Raddus. We're officially on Raddus watch.
Raddus watch.
No Ackbar. I don't want to see a young kid Ackbar hanging out with Raddus. I don't want. God. I just want. Give me Raddus. Raddus makes sense. Raddus makes total sense.
What if Raddus shows really up and his first mate is Ackbar? Well,
Raddus could be visited by Luthen. Raddus could be one of those factions, like the Mon Calamari.
At the party?
I don't think at this point, like the Mon Calamari, like I feel like they are bought into the rebellion. So who brings them into the rebellion? It could be Luthen.
Maybe Raddus.
See his ship land on some water and then like he launches out in a tube or something. That'd be great. Let's do it.
I'm ready.
All right.
Okay, that's good.
Adam,
that's
thanks for being on.
Yeah.
I was going to say thanks to Adam. Thanks for everybody in the chat that showed up today. I think next week we'll be back at 7:30.
Yeah, should be.
I'm going to see if we can't get a guest for that. Yeah.
I love
this show so much.
I can't wait. I love that we don't know what's coming up. It's so good. Yeah. I don't want to see trailers of next week or anything like that. I just give it to me. Thanks for coming on, Adam. Next week back at 7:30, and go to all the places, visit all the things, click all the links. We had the banner up earlier on. You know where to find us.
Yeah.
But until then, everybody, don't give in to hate.
Celebrate the love.
Punch it.